Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show, Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2377. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate and counselor from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening. So welcome, and we encourage you to call. The number here is 646-595-2118. Again, 646-595-2118. And we invite you to join. If you just want to listen, you can listen, but we invite you. So tonight, we're having a Q&A session with survivor professional Lori Golden from San Diego, California. She is a survivor and a private psychotherapist working with other trauma and abuse survivors. Lori shares, "I am a survivor of incest. My father sexually abused me from ages 5 to 16. When the sun went down, I was filled with terror, hypervigilance, and waiting. Everything in my room came alive. Lori started using drugs in college at 18 and cover her worthlessness, aloneness, and increasing desperation with bulimic exercising, food addiction, and drugs, culminating in a suicide attempt at 27. She says, I am an incest survivor, an addict in Narcotics Anonymous for 33 years. Congratulations. As well, and Food Addicts Anonymous for 30 years? Wow. She tells us her book, My House of Lies, is an awakening from a childhood of sexual abuse. It was published in July, and she is passionate about telling her story. So we're going to welcome her now. Hello, Lori.
Hello. How are you? I am so glad to be on the show tonight. This is my first time doing this, so I'm really looking forward to just being involved in NASCA. It feels good.
We're so excited to have you. And did you want to share a little bit of your story, or did you have any questions or topics you wanted to bring up to the panelists?
Well, I'm very interested in hearing what people would really like to talk about. I know for myself, what's really big right now, in at least not just with clients, but with friends and family, with myself, is there's more fear going around.
Yes.
And there's more, there's uncertainty. And it's it's not just a scary time. You know, the reality is we really do have some issues, real things that are scary. But then how we live in our own fear is what makes the difference between living in a state of fear versus comforting fear and finding ways to nurture ourselves through things. So I just think that right now this is just a huge, there's so much going around. I would love to hear what other people are doing in their own lives as fear comes up. So if anybody...
So why don't we, what I'll do is I'll introduce the panel, and they heard what you just said, and then they can respond or share with you what's on their heart. So is that okay?
Okay, good. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. First, we're going to go to Victoria in Minnesota. Hi, Victoria.
Hi.
You're on with Lori.
Lori? Yeah. Hi there.
Yeah. Yes. Hi.
Congratulations on your time in recovery. And I too have 33 years.
Okay.
And I always say all I have is this moment.
Amen.
You know, because I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, but having to do with fear, I always heard that faith is the opposite of fear. And I have a lot of faith. I've been through a lot, you know, the incest and child abuse and adult abuse and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and physical problems, cancer and kidney failure and a bunch of other things. And, you know, there was a lot of fear many, many times. And when I met my sponsor and stuff, I had very little hope that I was going to get sober, that I was, you know, once I got sober, that I was going to be able to deal with the memories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most important part is that she gave me hope. And I think hope combats fear, at least it did for me. And so, you know, when did you get to a point where that fear kind of went away with child abuse stuff?
Okay, to me, there's a difference between, for me, healthy fear is what I experience today versus monsters in the closet are everywhere, you know, like being a child in your room with, you just know there's a dark closet and there's monsters in there and you don't know, you're so scared to open the door to look in the darkness because you don't know what's going to get you. So fear has changed for me over time. But I know that for survivors that, you know, I know NASCA, there's a wide variety of people in earlier recovery, more long-term recovery. So fear has been, I've worked hard on not living in fear. And I, you know, my whole childhood was continuous, really living in fear nonstop. Every single night I lived in fear. So for me, fear used to be like a hot stove. If I felt fear, I'd immediately sense danger. It was danger out there. So I never got to understand that fear can be a part of change. And fear can be a part of new experiences. It's what we do with comes really the issue. And so I don't live in fear today, but does fear come up? Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a life with non-fear in it, because change in and of itself means it's the unknown. And yes, you can have faith stepping into the unknown, but I also think fear is natural. And I think fear can be a healthy kind of experience. It doesn't have to be a horror-filled experience. Faith, no question about it. My spirituality has made a tremendous difference. And I do live in a day at a time. and I do find ways to comfort myself, but like doing this radio show. So I was a little nervous, and you could say a little nervous means to some of those shows, so I could get a feel for things. And what I do with myself is just acknowledge who I am, and I can pray and let go of my fear and have faith that it's going to be okay. I don't have to suffer in the fear anymore. And that to me is what my recovery has really been about, is not suffering anymore.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Victoria. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go to Bobby in Florida.
Wow.
Hi, Bobby.
Boy, I'm right here. How do you like that? Hold on. My earplug fell out. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Bobby.
Okay. My earplug fell out. Here I am. Lori, hello.
Hello. It's
Bobby from Miami, Florida. I've been in NASCAR
hello,
4 years. Yeah, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to say hello to you. I've been in NASCAR 4 years. And I must say, Lori, today we had a Zoom. The first time ever I'm talking with NASCAR on a Zoom. And I met people in their own living room. And I was talking 4 years on the phone vlogs. I was just shocked, saying, oh, my gosh, there's that one. There's her. There's Bill. Oh, my gosh. I was like old home, but it really wasn't. It was like first time. And I was so just touched that here we are, you know, a family. 4 years, Lori, 5 nights a week, hour and a half every night. That's like almost family, you know. That's more than dinner table and your family. That kind of long time. Anyway, Lori, I go right to FEAR because my brother and sister took a part of my father and have capitalized on that, striking at me since my parents have passed away. The first time I said that, because I was so touched today, and I was just, I've been going to Bill's house on a Sunday for a little meeting, and I don't know, just been my evolution of my abuse has been, you know, getting there, getting to, you know, to a space. So this fear, my brother will call me on the phone, leave a message, and he'll strike my name as if he was my father. And, you know, growing up, I didn't even realize. It's only since NASCAR that I really, 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 really honed in on stuff that was disturbing me forever. And NASCAR was only 4 years. My father passed away in 2012. That's 8 years ago? Gosh, 8 years ago. Yes, I've been in NASCAR 4 years. So I had 4 years to pass away, and then I met NASCAR. And since NASCAR, I've sort of really honed in on stuff. Didn't really focus. So I got this... I guess it's a control issue. I guess that fear over me is a control issue. They can, you know, corral me. But I don't kowtow to it because I learn to listen intently at it and don't talk and don't argue. Even though I said those sentences to you, the fear is still there. It's like butterflies and and they can't get it. Even I don't get a perspiration on my brow when I come up against one of them, but it's there. Mm-hmm. Internally, it's there, and I sort of just smile and listen and go away. But the internal fear is there, and I'm just answering what you started off with, and I want to let you know where I'm at. Didn't ask for any, you know, remedy or prescription. I just was telling you stuff that I work on. Sometimes it might how you say it, stop me from it might be, what do you call it, a barrier against me completing a task. My mind mm-hmm. might wander. I might not attain a level of something I'm doing. I might not complete a program because it gets away from me. I kind of gave you a few details of my stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
No,
thank you, Bobby.
Lori, tell us something.
Tell us something. You know, I was just listening to what you were saying, and I know one of the things that I worked on a lot in myself is when I was in situations like you're describing, where you felt you get butterflies and you're aware of feeling fear, I often would ask myself, how old do I feel? Because I often could pinpoint approximately the age I was experiencing in my adult life, that I really, the fear took me back to a much younger age. And when I understood that, I started finding ways to nurture that little girl in me, because, you know, there was the adult in recovery, and then there was situations where fear just would get triggered in me. And I often, whenever I was in fear, I felt younger. And identifying different ages that we experience in our fear can help us nurture, give us what we need, actually, and give that child something that you might not have ever gotten.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Would you repeat that once more, just so I can hear you say that? Repeat that.
It's kind of like you're an adult here, and you're in a situation, and you feel your brow getting moist, and you're feeling butterflies in your stomach. And it can be very helpful to ask yourself, just silently ask yourself, how old do I feel right now? Because that's where we need help. Like, I know when I went back to my younger years, if I was afraid and I was, you know, I started my recovery in 1987. So a 37-year-old woman suddenly feeling terrified, it would confuse me. And I started understanding that I felt younger, and that when I could identify these ages that I felt fear, I started to understand that I could be a good parent to myself and take care of this child in me that was never taken care of.
Thank you, Bobby. We're going to move on to Sylvia in, is it Nevada? Yes.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes.
Okay. Hi. Hi, Lori. Listen, your story is a lot. It's Sylvie. Legally, it's Sylvia, but
okay.
I changed it when I was in the second grade. You can tell I'm an alpha female.
Okay. I got it, Sylvie.
Profound child abuse and childhood neglect, physical, emotional neglect, physical abuse. And my story is a lot like yours because because of my abuse, it wasn't really the fear for me. I was so dumbed down by denial because my mother dumbed us all down and we couldn't feel any anger because Dad was the angry one and he brought home the paycheck, which was the most important thing in the world. And so we all had to suppress our feelings. Okay. So, called me the scum of the earth, and my 20s were I was the living embodiment of the scum of the earth. I had year and a half long stints of anorexia, then bulimia, then anorexia, because the only attagirls I got from my sister, who struggled with her weight was, gee, Sylvie, you're skinny. You're so lucky. I mean, I had to be skinny because I didn't have anything else. Okay, so anyway, oh, and there was heroin addiction. There was the men who beat me. There was prostitution. There were the suicide attempts. Then at 27, I found Alcoholics Anonymous and was sober and clean for 20 years. Stability, just plain stability, okay? And plus, got a good spiritual program under my belt. Created my own higher power. My higher power is Mother God, the Holy Mama, okay? Now, it wasn't back then, but it is now. Now, after 20 years, I met my sadistic psychopath of a nightmare, wife-beating, wife-terrorizing husband from hell. I got 13th stepped in AA. Met him in AA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, indeed. I was so dumbed down by denial, I actually thought it was love, and he was actually cannibalizing my assets and taking advantage of my $20,000 in the bank and my good credit. He had a bankruptcy and just wanted a house in the worst way. And then as soon as we signed the construction loan for the house, that's when he started beating and terrorizing me. And he basically beat me out of it. But Mother God has such a delicious sense of humor, because after being a waitress for 20 years, I became a stockbroker, and she gave it all back to me and then some. So anyway, a tool that I use. Yes, I'm writing a book now called Why I'm Here, because profound spiritual awakening 2 years ago. No, I did not keep my sobriety, but guess what? I don't give a big fat rat's ass. That's not important to me. I had a 10-year-long marijuana addiction, on January 1st, I stopped smoking marijuana, and because I was no longer anesthetizing myself, discovered that indeed I am bipolar. I was anesthetizing my bipolarity, and that's what happens to a lot of AA people. And unfortunately, there are AA Nazis where you tell them you're on bipolar medication, and oh, Lordy B, that's just the worst damn thing you can do. So anyway, I don't go to AA, but AA is a wonderful program, the spiritual program. I use the program every day. I've got it under my belt. I've internalized it. All right? It's great. It's a great program for many, many people. Although it does have its drawbacks, just like anything else. A huge, huge, huge profound tool that I use is a profound meditation. And for years, I was limping along, you know, starting and stopping transcendental meditation, but I could never get it. It never worked for me. Then I read a book called Proof of Heaven by Dr. Eben Alexander, a neurosurgeon who had an NDE. He had a near-death experience. I mean, imagine this left-brain scientist who used to pat his patient's shoulders and say, they're there, when they told him about his NDEs, their NDEs. And this guy has one because he had meningitis, and he was out of his mind, literally, for 2 weeks, near-death, lost about 40 pounds. Anyway, here this guy is describing his experience in heaven, all these higher beings, these beings of light, him floating on the back of a butterfly's wings with the face of a beautiful woman who, when he comes back from heaven, he realizes is a relative of his who has passed away that he never knew. And Dr. Alexander talked about these tapes called HemiSync tapes. HemiSync. They facilitate a meditation that is as deep as somebody who has practiced TM for 20 years. And I have been doing this for a while now, and literally I experience bliss, sheer unadulterated bliss, chi flowing throughout my body for an hour and 15 minutes twice a day. And of course, this spills into my life, where today I was driving in my car to Walmart with my gloves and my mask. You know, I didn't have my mask on. but I had it draped around my neck. And there was this guy in a wheelchair waiting for the light to turn green. And I looked over at him. There he was in a wheelchair, the poor guy. And I blew him a kiss. And, oh, my God, he got this big, fat smile on his face. This manifests in my life profoundly, profoundly, profoundly. And I am just so blessed to have this incredible tool. And I hope I've shared it with y'all. You know, I get, it's called Meta Music. And the one that I listen to is The Shaman's Journey. But there's also a profound one called Ascension. They're all profound. I mean, profound. I mean, I can't, okay. You're going to get what you get. But anyway.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you,
Sylvie.
We have to move on to
you're very welcome.
Person, but we're going to go to Alicia in Ohio.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Glory.
Hi, can everybody hear me okay?
Yep,
yes.
Ma'am.
Okay,
yep.
Great. My name is Elisheba, and my abuse started when I was 3 years old. I was molested by my babysitters, my grandma, my uncles, my cousins, all kind of relatives molested me. All the way up until I was like 7 years old. And then I'm from Alabama. So we left there and we come up to Detroit, Michigan. And I just went through so much. And I was just listening to the gentleman when he was talking about fear. And I went through so much fear. I just would like to talk to him for a minute and let him know that I went through so much fear because so much happened to me when I was in the dark. When I was a little girl and when I was a teenager growing up, people would come in my room and rape me. And, you know, my mom, she's a narcissist. And, you know, she was an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic. So all through my life, I never had no support. I had to practically do everything on my own, all up into my all of my life, it's always been just me and God, you know? And I was so afraid of the dark. I was so afraid of the dark from the time I was a little girl all the way up until it just left. I mean, I just fully recovered from sleeping in my house in a pitch black room about 7 years now. 7 years now. Now I'm like 54 years old. So, yeah, it's so much things happened to me in the dark, and I was so afraid of being in the dark. And I can relate to all the butterflies and stuff he say he feel, and you know he around certain things and certain situations makes him afraid. But I just want to let you know that it took me a very, very long time to get rid of the fear. From, you know, all the things that happened to me in my childhood and my adult life, you know. And then one lady said she was a prostitute. I went through that from the age of 13 all the way up until I was like 30 years old. I was a prostitute working the streets on drugs and alcohol. And, you know, I just went through so much trauma in my life, so much trauma. And, you know, and I... You know, it just amazes me today that I survived all of it. And then when I was like 22 years old, I had I was acting out of the child molestation and abuse and emotional pain that I went through from having an alcoholic mom and an alcoholic dad. And my mom was narcissist, and I never felt no love from her. I never felt anything from anybody. I never felt no love from anybody. There was nobody to help me all my life. I had to go through all of that pain and all that hurt and all that confusion and all that misery by myself, you know. And I just, you know, when I turned 13 years old, I went into prostitution and drugs, and I did that until I was 30 years old. And when I was 30 years old, I just felt like killing myself. I didn't want to live anymore. I was so destroyed inside out because I never had no support from my family. Even today, I still don't have no support from my family, you know. I guess you could say I'm the black sheep of the family, as they say, but, you know, today my mom, you know, I tried to confront her. My auntie raped me. My mom's sister raped me. All kind of things. People raped me and hurt me when I was a child. But I tried to confront my mom about 2 weeks ago. And I told her about it. Do you remember I told you that your sister raped me, her and her husband? And she said, why are you going to bring that up? Why are you going to bring that up? That's the past. But anyway, I went through all of that abuse and all of that pain and all of that trauma. And I made it up until I was 30 years old. And I was in prostitution and drugs and all of that for a very long time. And I had so much fear. I was afraid of the dark. I could not sleep in a dark room. I didn't have no confidence. I had poor self-esteem. You know, oh, my God, I was a wreck. And when I was turned 22 years old, I was still in prostitution because the prostitution didn't go away till I was 30 years old. I met God when I was 30 because I told God, if you don't help me today, I don't want to live no more. I'm so tired. I can't take it no more. I'm just tired. And when I was 22 years old, I was acting out of my abuse. I was acting out of my child molestation and what things that happened to me when I was growing up. I got shot in my face in my living room floor. Yeah, I died. I died on my living room floor. I was 22 years old because I heard somebody talk about near-death experience or somebody. They read a book and somebody came back. Yeah, I got shot in my face and the bullet went out the back of my brain, almost like the back of my brain. And I died on my living room floor and I left my body. I went to talk to God. Big old beautiful light, all kind of flowers, so beautiful, beautiful. And I had on a beautiful white robe, and I told him, I don't want to go back to earth. And one thing about when you die, people, you can remember everything and everybody. You remember your kids, your mom, everybody, everything. I remember everything. But I told God, I don't want to go back to earth because it's too much pain there. I don't want to live there anymore. He said, no, you got to go back. It's not your time. You got to go back. So he snapped me back in my body real quick because I didn't want to come back. He said, something you got to do. You cannot come here right now. And I just want to let everybody know that God is real. I was 22 years old, and then it took me 10 more years after that to really just give in to him and really just start a new life and give up the prostitution and the drugs. And I became a pastor of a Christian church. Oh, it was just so much. But the fear, it took me still, after I gave my life to God, it still took me like another maybe 15 years before I got rid of it. It just went away like 7 years now. Now I can sleep in a room in the dark, and I'm not afraid no more. And I don't have all those terrible nightmares that I used to have and feelings and stuff coming in my room and seeing things. So I just want to encourage everybody that God is way, you know, God is a good way to help you, you know, to help you. I mean, I went through therapy. Therapy really didn't do much. Even when I was going to therapy, I still wanted to die and kill myself. I felt so bad. So I just told God to help me at 30 years old, and here I am, you know, I'm free right now. I'm free from the pain and the sadness and the depression. Misery. I'm free.
Thank
I just feel
you.
Good right now. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna go to Bill in Florida, my co-host and our founder of NASCAR.
I wanna thank Lori Golden, who hasn't done very much yet, Lori, so come on. for taking this commitment.
What am I supposed to do?
No, hold on. I'm pulling your leg, and you have to get used to that because, you know, it's going to happen. Right. Ask Victoria.
I didn't take it like you were threatening me. I just said, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm a good learner. But anyway, go on.
You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. I just wanted to say thank you because we had this opening and we had discussed it with you about possibly taking a shift on, and now Lori is going to be covering the second Tuesday of each month. We heard her share not too long back, and I really enjoyed how she responded to the people that made comments on her story, on her life story, which, as I say, is only a little while back. You can find Lori's life story if you want. But based on how well she answered and fielded questions, we're delighted to have you, Lori, as one of our hyphenates, a survivor and a professional. And you're doing a perfect job. It's really Linda's fault if you aren't, because she's supposed to steer you in the right direction. Right, Linda?
Yes, everything's my fault.
There you go. See? Thanks for being with us, Lori. God bless.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, so everybody's mic is open, Lori. And if you want to pose a question or you want to answer anything that was said, however you want to go.
Yeah, I just really, I think as survivors, you know, especially for myself, that there really is a difference between feeling fear when it's healthy and it's okay and it's not making a big deal of it and not letting it escalate. The fear that becomes consuming to the point that it immobilizes us. And I just, I find that when I think about fear and what I do in fear and what other people do in fear can often be really helpful. I know one thing that I've noticed in survivors of abuse or even trauma, that there is a lot of negative thinking that gets triggered when fear comes up. We kind of go into self-doubt. We don't know what to believe. We kind of try to be hypervigilant to find out and to learn what's true and not true. And I just think that learning how to cope with fear has been really the greatest gift I've ever gotten in my recovery. Not living in it, but nurturing myself in it and letting go of it because it doesn't serve me. But I do appreciate people's... I would just love to hear if anybody can share what they do today in their fear when they notice it comes up and how they handle their fear today. If anybody has...
Okay, so I didn't really answer. I'll take a stab at this, Lori, for you. The crux of my problem is that I live in fear and resentment, simply said. And the solution for my problem is to try and come from faith and to give up resentment, make amends so that I have a kind of a clean slate to live against.
Yeah.
And once that happens, an amazing thing occurs, which is I get the thing we ask for at every meeting is serenity, right? We pray for serenity or peace, you could say, or comfort. That's what you get when you do this right. So somebody said earlier in the show, I think it might have been Victoria, that we trade fear for faith, or faith for fear.
Yeah.
I also believe in a higher power. And for me, that higher power is either everything or nothing. And I choose to believe the higher power is everything. And I also recognize that I've been taken care of all along. So why would I imagine that I'm not going to be taken care of from this point forward? I believe I will. But it's not an automatic thing. I have to choose the best decision I can based on what I believe is God's will for me. That's the trick.
Right.
If I do that,
right.
I'm free. That's where I use my free will, to select that choice. I make the choice and let go of the results because I believe those are the higher powers and something will happen. But, you know, fear has to do with living in extremes, either the extreme of... the worst thing that can happen to me or the best thing that can happen to me. Both are fearful. And usually the result of whatever action I do take is somewhere in the middle. But if I
right.
if I can imagine that I'm okay no matter which end of the spectrum occurs, the best I can imagine or the worst I can imagine, if I'm okay with that, then I'm okay to take the action, because the likelihood is something in the middle is going to happen, and I'll be okay. As I start practice this kind of thinking and praying and actions, my life gets smoother. It doesn't smooth all the way. As you said, Laura, yourself, I still sometimes get depressed. I still sometimes get, you know, I have life happen. I, too, had cancer. I had my aorta replaced a couple of years ago. That's a huge operation. But
yeah.
I just followed the direction that came to me, and I came out of it fine. And, you know, it was not easy, but it was the right thing to do. So I just try and pick, you know, God's will apparently was for me to have the problem, but I also believe it was God's will that I seek and find good medical situations to resolve it, which I did. I kept showing up for the appointments, eventually for the operation. Then I had a year's worth of recovery, I guess. Nobody even knew that it was going on because I didn't share it. And I was, you know, keeping NASCA going this whole time. Well, I did it through I was still uncomfortable. I was in pain, for example, but that's just pain. You know, that's physical
right.
stuff. I no longer fear being Bill. I no longer fear you're judging me. You know,
right.
I no longer fear the pains of hell. I've lived hell, you know. So I'm pretty free. That's a quick answer to the question you're posing, though, Lori. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing it up, Bill, is because a lot of people that I've been speaking to experience fear in different ways. And I'm not saying that, like, in my own life, I have learned how to handle my fear, and I don't live in it, and I do believe I'm going to be taken care of, and I do practice, you know, if I jump off, I'm going to land somewhere, it's not going to be that I'm going to crash and burn. But I know that it was a progressive experience for me to learn how to cope with fear. And often people at different points in their abuse recovery experiencing fear really have a hard time with understanding how to manage fear. And I think 33 years in program has taught me how to do this. But I also remember when, like, I have people that have shared with me, again, fear is, how do we stop the negative thinking? How do we stop the not running off into more fearful thinking? Because one fearful thought can lead to the next, can lead to the next. And I
right.
know I speak to a lot of people that are fairly new off drugs and alcohol and food. And it's learning how to cope with fear is really the crux of not just being a recovering addict alcoholic for me, but being a survivor. It's learning how to cope with it. And one of the ingredients I know in my own personal recovery is one of the things I felt a lot of fear behind is because I couldn't trust myself. I really didn't know who I was and what was okay for me and what wasn't okay for me. And so learning to trust ourselves, learning to stop negative thinking. I remember there was a long period where I went in my recovery where I would be up against negative thinking, and I made a commitment to say the Serenity Prayer. And I would say the Serenity Prayer over and over and over again to stop my negative thinking. And finally, at
right.
some point, my negative thinking left. But I just want people to understand that this is a process, and this comes in stages, and it just doesn't happen quickly and overnight. It's something that we get to practice in our lives. And I'm bringing up fear only because it's so, it's, Really, every single person I talk to has some measure of fear going on. Not that they all cope with it badly, but there is some measure of fear and uncertainty right now.
Yes,
absolutely,
absolutely
true. I love that. Yeah. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Does anyone else want to take a shot at that question about your fear today and how you dealt with it?
I'd like to say something.
Who's this?
This is Sylvia in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Just very shortly, I'd like to say that when I notice that I'm obsessing about something, what I do is I bring myself into the present. I look at the grass. I feel my body. I feel my feet. I listen to my breathing. I look at what's going around me. Because let's face it, all we have is right now. But who lives in right now? And also, if you look at this, it's actually a meditation, because you're obsessing, but living in the now is your mantra. And it is where we should be anyway. That's all I wanted to say. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, grounding techniques are very helpful to fear. Absolutely.
Yes, Victoria. I also like the stay in the moment too. You like, I would say stay in the present, and the present is a gift from my higher power. It's a gift, you know. And I wake up every morning with that gift, and like Bill was talking about action, you know, I mean, I get to choose all day long what I'm going to do with that gift. And my prayer, whatever you want to call it in the morning, is, you know, grant me inner peace, outer love, and help me help another person today. You know, let me give somebody some kind of joy, you know, and that is kind of, but the grounding thing is really important to me. I learned that one of the things that I do when I'm starting to obsess about something or remember something that's scary or whatever is plant both feet flat on the ground. And I agree too with my therapist or psychologist would tell me, look around you, like the other guy was talking about, and, you know, look at three things. That thing wasn't there when my dad was being abusing me. That tree wasn't there when I was being abused. You know, that picture on the wall wasn't there when I was being abused. And, you know, just to bring me back to the here and now. And but I also do want to say that, you know, sometimes I'll be in a situation and I'll feel fear, and sometimes I try to brush it away. But, you know, I think that fear can be a good thing, too, because it's like a red flag for me that says, you know, maybe something's wrong with this situation. You know, this person just said such and such, and that's a red flag, you know. And that's why I'm feeling this fear right now, is because, you know, it's danger. You know, it's like, you know, the house is on fire. You know, you don't just go, well, I shouldn't be afraid of this. You know, get up and run the hell out. You know, and I know that I've heard say fear, F-E-A-R, is F everything and run, or face everything and recover. And I've been in recovery, not just, you know, the program, but I started going to therapy when I was 21, when I first escaped from my dad. And he insisted me for infancy until I was 21. And I wanted to say to Sylvia that when you're 13 years old, you're not a prostitute. That's child sexual abuse and child rape. And I work with survivors of systems of prostitution, which is prostitution, pornography, and stripping. And the average age is 13. And that is not a decision. You know, that is something that is done to us. We are, you know, not capable at that age of making a decision about it.
Well, honey, I was in my 20s. I was in my 20s. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I was doing.
Okay. It was a matter of me having the self-esteem
of pond scum.
Yeah.
You know, that's really sad.
Yeah.
But honey,
yeah, because you know,
sorry for me because oh my God, I am so blessed. I have turned all of my pain and despair into service. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a purpose. God gave me this life and these experiences, and I do not regret. Mother God gave this to me. I love it. All of it. I embrace it because it is my spiritual journey, every bit of it. And my fear, you are so right. Fear informed me. Sometimes I'll be in meditation and I'll have a big knot in my gut. Well, you know, I used to try to get rid of it. Now I embrace it. I ask it what it's trying to tell me. I invite it to stay. That's what I do with my fear. I don't try to get rid of any of my feelings now. You know, they are my fears. They're God-given. And, oh, my God, there's a lot of stuff to be afraid of, especially for women.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeedy.
Go ahead, Victoria. You can finish.
You know, what I wanted to just say is that I know for me, fear for me, it's solution-based. And I know that part of it is bringing in a solution and not just, for instance, I'm a woman, I'm small. If I go to a parking garage, I have no problems carrying pepper spray. Now, that helps me not to live in fear. That helps me to just feel like I'm taking care of myself or in other situations. So, to me, fear also can be solution-based. It's not just that it's not always, sometimes it's gaining knowledge when you don't have knowledge. Sometimes it's learning something that might make it easier for you to feel more comfortable in the situation. There's just a lot of different ways that people can handle fear. And I just think that the more we learn how to take care of ourselves and not run from it and allow it to be there and listen to it and acknowledge it, doesn't mean you have to live in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I say something? Hello. Hi.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to address this. It was me, Elisha Bob, saying that the prostitution started when I was 13 years old because my mom, she actually used me to make money from grown men. She used to sell me to people, to grown men, and to babysitters when I was like 3, 4, 5 years old. So I started prostitution when I was 13 up until I was 30 years old. But, yeah, fear, I used to fear people so bad because all through school, people would harass me and bully me and talk about me, and I was so terrified. I was so terrified of people, being around people, because I always felt that somebody was going to hurt me, you know, because of all the abuse that I went through in school and in my own household and my family. So, yeah, the way I dealt with the fear is very tormenting. It's a very tormenting feeling. I mean, like the gentleman say, you feel butterflies. Oh, I felt that so much in my life, so much. But I can't say today that I don't feel those butterflies no more. And like I said, it's just been 7 years now. And I think by me building a relationship, a strong relationship with God, that he have helped me to, you know, overcome that. It took me a very long time, though. And it was so very unpleasant, feeling all that fear and, you know, and pain and, you know, just rejection, a lot of rejection and, you know, people not accepting you for who you are and what you want to be. So the way I dealt with my fear over the years, when I turned 30 years old, I just began to pray and build a relationship with God. And still, even though you build a relationship with God, me personally, I still had that fear and I still had a lot of torment and a lot of nightmares and a lot of things that I was afraid of. And it just didn't go away. And even though I was with God, I didn't understand for a long time. I'm with God, and I'm, you know, I believe in God. I go to church and all of that. But why do I still feel so afraid of the dark and afraid of this and that? But today I can say that I have overcame a lot of things when it comes to fear. So
that's great. Seriously, that's great.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody else want to answer that question about how you dealt with fears today? And we have a new person.
It is Bobby.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I just want to thank Lori for the few words she said to me a few minutes ago. That I've written little excerpts of you know, past, and and I've not talked the story. I've written it and thought it over. And the point you made a minute ago about going back to the story and thinking me at that time, this is beyond writing it and reading it and remembering it. Go back with me to the time and see if I can live there in for a moment and heal it, healing it. Am I correctly
you know, you don't even have to go back in time. Yeah, but Father, I just want to say you don't even have to go back in time.
Sorry, you're on speaker and you're going back and forth and you're speaking back and forth. You got to talk into the microphone.
I have my microphone. I am talking into the microphone. Can you hear me now?
Yes, oh, you're fine, Lori.
Very, very distant.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. Okay. What I wanted to say is that when that comes up, when fear comes up and we're not sure exactly what it is, and I can identify how old we feel, we don't even have to go back. You're in it, in the moment. It's alive in the present. It's with you today. And it's just thinking about if, let's say, you can connect with a 9-year-old. What does a 9-year-old need to feel safe? What does a 9-year-old need to feel comfort? How do you comfort a child, you know, a 9-year-old? What are some things that you might need at those ages? So it's kind of just experiencing in the moment an age that might be coming up for you when you're feeling uncomfortable or afraid.
Okay, thank you.
Is that what I said, Lori? Did I say that? Did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Feeling comfortable in the moment when I think of the story. Okay, I got you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bobby. We're going to go to Darlene in Tennessee. Darlene, we're talking about fear today. Do you want to say anything?
Was there a question that somebody wanted, that somebody asked that I should
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
There was a question that somebody asked, and I don't know what the question was about fear.
Oh, Lori, you want to repeat your question?
I mostly was asking people to share how they comfort themselves in fear, what they do to ease their what people do to ease fear.
I check my surroundings and I make sure that I'm in a safe place and that I comfort myself and I go because I'm not around any of these bad people. I'm keeping my distance. I am safe. I had to remind myself that I am safe at the moment, you know, and I kind of like hug myself and tell myself everything's okay, you know, comfort myself, you know. And, you know, what I didn't get the comfort in and hugs from my parents, you know, I kind of like to do that now.
That's actually very special. That's special.
Vaseline, then I rubbed it a lot, because that's what they told me to do on YouTube. And then I rub it with the, I put my gloves on, I put a lock, and it went in. And he okay with sleep. Yeah, he okay, huh? I think they said it's good because it was dry. His dick was dry. And it needs some lubrication.
Wait, is this, I'm not sure what's going on. Somebody told
So I'm sorry for, you know. But I just wanted you to do it the way they were selling
it. What about the stuff?
The soap? Maybe you could soap them.
Does anybody know what's going on right now?
It's not there no more. And I think, did you put this stuff, the soap on the thing? It's cool, right?
I think that's Bobby's background, I think.
I didn't see the fun.
And whose background is that? I'm confused as to what's going on.
Let me
is that Bobby's background?
I think it was
okay.
Lisa.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, it's Alicia.
Okay, is that Alicia in the back? Because I hear different
yes.
voices coming in.
Yeah, put in a little pot of water, spaghetti.
Alicia, you have a lot of background noise, so we're going to have to mute you.
Yeah, I think you just need to mute Alicia right now.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was having I was thinking that somebody was sharing about something and that I wasn't hearing them well.
Yeah,
but,
that's
yeah,
what I thought.
Okay.
So I apologize.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Okay, yeah, no, I got confused myself, so, yeah.
Charlene, did
you
finish?
Do you go and hug yourselves at time, too, and you just feel the warm embrace? Kind of like, remember whenever you hugged your children, remember that warm embrace that you felt when you hugged them? So just remember
that,
Charlene. That you're hugging yourself.
I like that.
Yeah. Thank
you.
You know,
I think there's a spiritual way in which we can be taken care of and loved. And I also think there's a gift in us loving ourselves and learning how to do that. And learning how to take steps to just take care of ourselves in very kind, loving, nurturing ways. And developing a practice in how to self-care. And to me, that's about, you know, living in love versus living in fear. It's how I love myself today is really the antidote for me for fear in the way that I used to experience it. Like, I'm not afraid to be afraid anymore. You know, I used to be afraid of being afraid.
May I say something? This is Sylvia in Las Vegas. May I say something?
Yes.
Sure.
You know, what Bill said, wow. You know, when he said that God has taken care of him through all of these years, you know what? I am 68. You'd never in a million years believe it because I don't look, act, feel it. Or anything. I have some beauty secrets, darling. It's all going to be in my book. Anyway, yes, self-care. Man, I eat my dark green leafy vegetables. Oh, I take that smoothie in the morning. It is in green. It's black with spirulina and matcha green tea and spinach and blueberries and bananas. Oh, my God, yes. Self-love. You are loving yourself. You are loving what God gave you. how dare we not love ourselves? How dare we hate ourselves? Yeah. You know, I spent a good deal of my life. That's what I learned when I was a child, self-hatred. And wow, yeah. Loving yourself. If I do not love myself, oh my God, the world will grab on to that and they will be glad to just kick me to the curb. Absolutely. Love yourself. When you love yourself, your life is magic. And another thing Bill said was, God has taken care of us all these years. Oh my God. I listen to you, Lori. I listen to the lady who went through prostitution, hell on earth, incest. My God, Darlene's story last night. You know, my story is nothing, nothing. But it's what the abuse did to me. It's what the abuse did to me. That's what matters. And, you know, I should have died a million times over. All of us should have. I should have died of prostitution, eating disorders, suicide attempts, heroin addiction. Those all kill people. But yet I'm still here. What makes me think I'm not going to be here, you know, going through this little whatever? You know what I mean? Plus, I've lost my fear of death. So if Mother God takes me, well, hey, I'm on to greener pastures in heaven. So, you know, I mean, and Lori, you know, you said something profound. Basically, you're living by the serenity prayer. You're controlling things that you can change. When you watch your back in the parking lot, when you got your keys ready,
right.
When you have your mace ready, you know,
right.
Yeah. You know, what you're doing is you're practicing the serenity prayer, and that is very smart. That's all I wanted to say.
Could I say something to you, Sylvia? Sylvie?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You said your story is nothing similar to mine, but please don't discount your own abuse, even though, you know, it might be different or something. You gotta work through whatever pain and everything that you went through, you know?
Thank you, Darlene.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. Now you're loved.
Right,
yeah, this is Victoria. Yeah, I just wanted to say, when I was talking about, like, red flags and stuff, when I used to feel fear with my dad, you know, in the very end and stuff, well, mostly throughout my life with all the abusers, which were many, when I felt fear, I was frozen and I couldn't do nothing. So, like, when I said, you know, like, if the fire is burning, get out, you know? And
mm-hmm.
And one night I was able to escape him and go to the police and stuff because I pretty much was a prisoner of him. And so that's kind of what I meant, you know, because I would freeze. When I felt fear, I would freeze.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't get out of a bad
mm-hmm.
situation. I just wanted to clarify
right.
that.
Yeah, I think I understood that, by the way, when you were sharing. I think
okay.
freezing
okay.
was typical for me. For myself as well, growing up, I froze. I got
yeah.
immobilized. And the fear immobilized me.
Yeah.
So for me, fear is an action. To not live in fear means you have to take action on
right.
your own behalf, as well as develop some kind of spiritual connection that's greater than you, because then whatever you can't solve, that's when you turn it over and say, okay, I've done the best I can do. Now I need your help. I need your guidance. I need your faith.
Can I say something? This is Darlene.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the fight or flight. But when you're going
yeah.
with a flight,
mm-hmm.
you're going with a flight. If you're not fighting, the flight doesn't necessarily mean that you left and ran away. It could mean that you left your body, you know, you left yourself because it's too hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That you,
yep.
Edward, you flew inside yourself basically to be able to cope with this devastation in a different way because it's too much for somebody to deal with.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
I know,
what I heard. It's fight, flight, or
yeah.
freeze. there's three things. from fear or bad things that are happening.
Yeah, in my book that I'm working on presently, one of the things that I've got that I'm working on is called the Untouchables. So I talk about the fight or freeze, you know, the when somebody approaches me, how I would freeze for fear of being touched. So I'm sure y'all have experienced that or are experiencing that.
Thank you, Darlene.
Like, stay away from me. I hope this person don't touch me. And then all of a sudden he goes ahead and the much I wanted touching still happens or something. And so you just freeze and you go inside your body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
and
somebody else was talking. Yeah, go on.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Lori.
No, I really want to hear what you're going
to
say.
I just wanted to say that as far as the fear goes, I didn't realize this till just this second as we're talking about this, that mine was always fight. I was the one who would punch, try to get away, fight, verbally fight, however. And to this day, I don't always recognize it, but when I am afraid, I will go over with the fight situation. Like,
mm-hmm.
I get verbally too much.
Oh,
and
me too.
I didn't realize for
this
second it's because I am afraid of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that's really neat.
Yeah.
You know, really fear.
I wouldn't say that you really overdo it because of the fact that you're still dealing with the feelings that you had even back then. So it's still got to be worked through. So you're going to have those periods where you're going to feel like you're overdoing it. And really whatever, like a psychiatrist told me years ago, I asked him, I said, am I crazy? He said, well, crazy is like if you're approaching a rapist, for instance, and you just all of a sudden just be happy, go lucky, you know, don't fear this person. But that's crazy of you because of fear that you already know that he's a dangerous person. So crazy is not having any kind of fear factor there.
Okay. Thank
what
you
dealt with in the past.
Lori, what is your take?
I want to say something about being crazy. I always thought that was crazy, and I kept saying that I was crazy to people. And my, I met this woman who said, you're not crazy. What was done to you was crazy. You're just reacting normally to a crazy situation because it's something abusive, you know. I mean, since I was sexually abused since I was an infant and abused as a young child, my reaction to if somebody that I knew was going to sexually abuse me or whatever was to react in a way where I acted like I was enjoying it because I was afraid I didn't, I would get hurt more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
I have a hard time with the word crazy. That's all I want to throw out there. Because I call myself crazy.
Yeah, that's a survival skill. So even after I divorced my ex-husband, that was abusive. I kind of, if I was, you know, being attacked or something, you know, I had to act like I was enjoying so I'll be able to get away free, you know.
Yep.
I'd like to say something. May I say something? This is Sylvie. You know, listen, I just love this talk about crazy, crazy, crazy. Now, listen. I just got diagnosed about 3 months ago with bipolar disorder. My God, on top of everything else, I started seeing a trauma therapist. Well, guess what? I just found out she lied to me. So I'm dropping her like a hot potato. Anyway, you know, everybody thinks bipolar people are nuts as a $3 bill. All it is mood swings where
For me, no. I know what it's like to be on 40 milligrams of Prozac and be depressed. Depression for me is anger turns inward, self-hatred. Okay, no, I ain't on Prozac anymore. Okay, got off that shit. Anyway, yes, I'm taking Seroquel for bipolar disorder. My loads are compassion. I weep when I see something on television or I see one of my fellow human beings hurting. I would not change that for the world. And in the meantime, I experience bliss. So, I mean, hey, I feel sorry for normal people. That's all I wanted to say about crazy.
Hey, when you get in one of those happy moods, you can come rearrange my apartment and you can go ahead and organize all that, you know.
Okay, I'm going to ask everybody to stop because we're kind of going over each other and I want to kind of bring it in. I want Lori to speak a little bit. Lori, with that flight or fight or freeze, like when we recognize it, and we're still doing it to some degree, what are some tips to stop that or to help that?
Well, I know first you have to recognize that it's, you're in the moment, you're afraid, because what you can't stop something unless you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that might sound silly, but if you don't know that you want it, that you're like the fight or flight, that you're like about to take off in some way, you're leaving, all it means is you're leaving the moment and you're going somewhere that you feel might be a safer place, whether it's dissociation can happen very quickly in that, in fight or flight. So you have to know that you're leaving the moment. And often people don't even realize they're leaving the moment because it's such an automatic response. So different things trigger fight or flight. And different scenarios, different people that you're interacting with, different, you can be suddenly, you could be talking or you're in a situation and somebody says something and it's, makes you uncomfortable, and next thing you know, you aren't in the moment anymore, like you've left. And so the more you recognize that you're leaving, the more you can then start to understand what is it that's causing me to leave in the first place? What just happened? See, I know for me in my fight or flight, it was such an automatic response to get away. And, you know, I left my body. I went somewhere else, did from the moment. I didn't even know that I was doing that until I started realizing I was doing that. And I slowly started paying attention to what's causing me to feel this way right now. Like, what is going on in this moment? And for a lot of people, it's not obvious. It can be very subtle, but something's going on. So first you have to know you kind of want to take off. And you have to be able to identify what the triggers are that make you want to run. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
Okay. So,
and what makes sense is that you basically you said, oh my God, this is what Dr. Phil always says, and it's so true. You cannot change what you don't acknowledge. That's what you're saying, and it's profound. What you're saying is profound, and it covers every aspect of life. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. But it's really true. You know, we can't change something that we're not aware exists.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to be able to understand that. That's why I'm saying even something like feeling fear and wanting to run, well, you have to understand, what am I running from? What am I trying to get away from? And then you have to find ways to ground yourself. And that grounding techniques are a great way to stop, fight, or flight. It's noticing, you have to notice your breathing's accelerated. I work a lot with people on closing their eyes and acknowledging, feeling the sensations in our body, and particularly feeling that when fear comes up, we get accelerated in our breathing. And when that starts to happen, you need to understand that you're afraid now. And before you leave the scene of the crime, so to speak, you have to know that fear is starting to come up. And breathing techniques are a wonderful way to work on staying, not running, and staying put. And by running, for people who have been abused, running, it, you know, takes many different forms. You know, yes, you can literally run away from the situation or situation by leaving the moment. And that's what dissociation is all about. And so, we dissociate to try to feel safe. It's a brilliant way, a brilliant coping mechanism, really, to really have us leave the moment to go someplace that we think might be safe. And so I brought up fear because so much of what abuse is about is fight or flight. It's getting stuck in that wanting to run and freezing. And it's learning how to recognize fear when it comes up in us. And fear hides in many different ways. Like when someone's screaming, they could be feeling fear. You know, do certain behaviors. It doesn't look like fear, but it's fear. And so understanding how fear presents itself in all the different ways that we kind of mask it is really important. When I was obsessive about something, it's because I was afraid. I was afraid to feel in my body. So I'd go in my head and I'd start obsessing, and I left my body in that way. That was part of what my eating disorder was about. Every time I would leave, I felt, or when I get obsessed about being thin or fat, and, you know, I would get obsessive about my body, it's because that's a way that I left my body. And always it was because I was afraid to stay in my body. So there's many doing to coping with fear and learning how to recognize it and respond differently to it. But you first have to know that you're in fear.
Absolutely. And we have about 5 minutes left, Lori. So is there anything you want to talk about or you want to share with the listeners?
Just that, you know, like all of you, I grew up in a horrible situation, a very terrifying situation, and I learned survival. And what I learned along the way is I tried to run for myself in so many different ways. And what I learned is there is no running. You know, there is no getting away from ourselves. And really, to me, has been my whole, that's grown over time so that I don't have to run from myself and I don't have to run from what I'm feeling. And, you know, a lot of times people in recovery will say, well, gee, you had so many years, you still feel fear or you still feel sad or you still, of course. Part of being human is having a range of emotions. It's what we do with these emotions that make the difference between feeling good and not feeling good and moving forward and getting stuck. So I'm not sure if I answered any of that, but just there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide, you know?
Absolutely. And you have tell us a little about your book.
Yeah, my book is my memoir, and it's about having 37 years old, I had complete amnesia with my abuse. And so when I got into drug recovery at age 37 in 1987, I didn't at all have a clue that I was sexually abused by my father. And within 6 months of coming off of my drugs, I started having flashbacks. And
yes.
My book is about my road to recovery and my road to my sanity. I felt crazy. And the reason I felt crazy is because I couldn't trust myself, know what I really thought or felt. And I always would question everything and go back and forth in my head. And it would lead to me thinking I was crazy. And I just grew to appreciate over the years of my recovery how sane children really are in the way that they cope with their abuse. I marvel at it, that I was a child living through what I went through and went and functioned day in and day out in my life outside of my home. And it's just about my whole family recovery. It's about finding faith. It's about my spirituality. So it's all about healing, and the slow, steady climb of my healing in life. And it didn't happen overnight.
Right. You did an absolutely wonderful job tonight, and you're one of the few people I've heard that had amnesia memories as well. That's when mine came up in my 30s after I started counseling school.
Mm.
So very interesting. My story is so similar to yours.
I know.
Thank you. You did a wonderful job. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Thank you. No, I just said I know about your story.
You did a wonderful job, and we look forward to having you back next month. I want to invite everybody to look at the NASCA website at naasca.org. You'll find lots of resources and lots of phone numbers. And we invite people to call. We invite people to reach out to us. NASCA is a family, and we have one purpose, and that's to help survivors of child abuse of any type. So visit our website, and we have these radio shows every night at 8 o'clock, Monday through Friday. And now we have support groups during the day. Go on our Facebook page or website, and you'll see them at 2 o'clock Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Thank you very much. I'm Linda Vitti from New Jersey, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow. 'Cause that dawn was